You value your child, and requesting eye contact is a way to gain a child's attention should you need to communicate important messages. Never use eye contact as an excuse to give your child a mean and angry stare. Instead, use your eyes to communicate in a loving and nurturing way. The goal here is to be healing. Give your child the experience he would have received if he had been with you from the beginning, when you could have cradled him in your arms and gazed at him with love. Match your child. Matching is the mirroring and physical mimicking that occurs instinctively between two closely connected individuals. You see it when a mother and baby coo and smile and giggle at each other. A child may do it by assuming the same posture that her parent is sitting in. It's the synchrony of two children playing together, subconsciously adopting the identical gestures and vocalizations. Matching is about becoming attuned to another human being, and it is a very nurturing activity. The level of matching shared by parent and child reflects their intimacy and bonding. You can purposely match your child and enhance your connection. For example, by kneeling down to a child's level when you look her in the eye, or by sitting on the floor in the same position she has chosen to play a game, you send an important, unspoken message that you're responsive to her, that you see and value your child. Attunement signals awareness of the other person. By watching your child's reaction when you attempt to match, you will learn subtle lessons about your child's fear and readiness to share closeness. For example, if you purposely choose the same flavor snack that your little boy has chosen, and then he notices your choice and decides to switch his own to something different, you could be dealing with a traumatized child who feels a strong need for self-protective boundaries. Be patient and respect his comfort level and need for safety and distance. As children become more attuned to their families, they will match a parent's stance, voice, and gestures. So remember that your behavior is a model for your child. If you're trying to help your child calm down, for example, you'll need to act calmly yourself. If you move swiftly and speak loudly, your child will pick up on that and begin to mimic it. Be conscious of your body language and voice, even the way you make eye contact. The power of positivity. You can reach children more effectively by using a positive approach. The more genuine, encouraging statements and upbeat comments you make, the safer your child will feel and the more motivated. Research shows that children mimic people they perceive as strong and who like them. Whenever you can, lavish your child with genuine encouragement and praise. In the beginning, you may have to be creative to find things to praise. But with encouragement, your child will learn to trust that you won't be overly critical and that it's safe to take risks and try new activities. Encouragement keeps your child's stress and cortisol levels low and creates an environment of felt safety and healing. When you're teaching your child, give him both motivational and technical coaching in equal parts. Motivational coaching builds emotional connections with your child and demonstrates your confidence in the child's ability to learn. Examples. You've almost got it. That was so much better. Good try. You're getting so close. I just know you're going to hit the ball. Technical coaching corrects and instructs the child on the mechanics of an activity. Examples. Keep your eye on the ball. Keep your hands steady. Put your whole body into the swing. If you'd put your hands closer together and roll them over a quarter of a turn, you'd have better control of the bat. Create conditions where your child can succeed at meaningful tasks. Be honest and upbeat. Make sure your body language and voice match the upbeat message. Look for opportunities to say nice things and make positive statements. Don't speak falsehoods just to be kind. You can be sincere and still find real things to praise. For example, when you realize that your child has been sitting quietly, even if it's only been for 45 seconds, smile and say, "Good job of sitting quietly." Your praise is a powerful motivator, and by marking the desired behavior, you're helping cement it in the child's brain. Praise and encourage your child throughout the day. Examples. "Honey, that is good eye contact. That is good listening to me. I like the way you look at me when you talk. I'm so happy to be with you. You've got such a precious smile. Phrase instructions in the positive. When you first work with your child to halt inappropriate behavior, you will have to issue strong statements in the negative, such as, "We do not hurt other people." However, as your child progresses, give instructions in the positive whenever possible. Tell your child what to do instead of what not to do. Here are some ideas. Replace this negative, "Don't run," with this positive, "Remember to walk." "Practice walking." "Stop." Replace this negative, "Don't yell," with this positive, "Speak softly." Replace this negative, "Don't throw that," with this positive, "Hand it gently." Give it to her with respect. Later, after your child has done well, praise him or her with statements such as, "Great walking properly," and "Good speaking softly." Redirect your child gently. Rather than scolding a child who might meander off into a world of her own, try to get her to be more intentional about focusing. If you ask your child to go make her bed, it's not unusual to find the bed neglected while she is playing on the floor with a toy she found. Here's an effective exchange. Mom, in a gentle, neutral voice. "What's the one thing I asked you to do?" Larissa, "Make my bed." Mom, "Okay, sweetheart, focus and finish your task." The best way for you to avoid becoming a screamer or a grouchy whiner is to focus on redos, which imprint correct behavior on your child's motor memory. Focus on the real child within. Bolster your child's self-image by focusing on the real child inside him or her. In other words, when your child is displaying positive and genuine behaviors, such as showing respect, sharing authentic kindness, using words to express feelings, and so on, we refer to those as being behaviors of the real boy or the real girl. When your formerly glum and angry daughter gives a genuinely happy smile or behaves affectionately, praise her and point out her positive transformation with statements such as, "I love to see that real girl smile." By marking it as real, you help your child recognize her own authentic potential and preciousness. You're celebrating the very best of who you know your child to be and grounding her in that. Terms like finding the real girl and finding the real boy help express that beautiful inner core of a child who has experienced deprivation and early trauma. Avoid negative labels. Watch out for a habit that is deceptively easy to slip into, but has serious repercussions for the family. Using negative descriptions to label your child is especially allowed. Offhand comments to other adults such as, "Oh, Sheila is always so manipulative," or "Paul is our little monster," are destructive to your child's self-esteem and counterproductive to healing. Words are powerful, and your negative statements can become a self-fulfilling prophecy to both you and your child. Any type of label can pigeonhole your child, and negative labels in particular will stick in your brain and color the way you see your child. One of the most important gifts you can give your at-risk child is a new, improved way of looking at the world and himself or herself. It's immensely important that you choose your words carefully. As the old saying goes, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all, especially when it comes to your child. Embracing your child's growth. As a child heals and blossoms, your memories of past behavior can be at odds with the child's newly found authentic self. We have seen parents become genuinely bewildered when a formerly incorrigible child makes tremendous positive progress, especially in a short time. The contrast between the child's former wildness and his current cooperativeness and affection can be mind-boggling. It may be tempting for you to make offhand remarks such as, "This is not my child," or to joke, "Where are my children? What have you done with them?" However, do not make statements or jokes like that within or outside earshot of the child. Children can be easily alienated and wounded by flippant remarks or backhanded compliments. They won't understand the joke, irony, or sarcasm behind your comments, but will absorb a message of rejection. If you feel compelled to remark on the child's dramatic progress, we suggest instead offering kind remarks directly to the child, such as, "I love seeing the real Cindy. Let's go look in the mirror so you can see those beautiful, soft eyes that I see. You're so special to me." In this way, you nurture and reinforce the positive transformation, strengthen your family bond, and celebrate the child's inner core of goodness. I need to start attaching myself to the real Lily, and not to these past experiences. It's about me changing and recognizing that Lily is this little girl who is loving, kind, and compassionate. She can meet her goals. I had never seen that before. My memory bank is full of garbage. I need to start building my memory bank around these good things and remember that the past doesn't equal the future. Father of a girl adopted at age 9 from an environment where she was victim to sexual predators. Fill the trust bank. When you and your child are laughing and having fun doing something together, reach across to your child and touch his shoulder, hand, or chin with a gentle touch and say, "This is so much fun. I love doing this with you. You are such a joy to me." This type of spontaneous gesture soaks his little spirit in joy, filling up his trust bank. We use the concept of a trust bank to describe the ongoing incremental effort required to reach an at-risk child. With a harmed child, it takes many, many deposits into the trust bank to make headway and help him feel truly safe. His default setting is fearfulness and unease. Genuine affection, praise, and felt safety all make deposits into your child's trust bank. At first, your child may seem uneasy with the lavish attention, but with time, he will begin to accept the truth of his own preciousness. Parents have to put in a lot of unconditional, "You are so precious to me," and "What a great try," type of statements to build up the balance in a trust bank. You can also make deposits by meeting your child's needs joyfully, not begrudgingly. There is a difference between unconditional nurturing praise that fills up a trust bank and praise that is given strictly based on performance. Performance-based praise, linked to your child's skill or behavior, can be revoked. When the only compliments your child receives from you are conditional and performance-based, the trust bank suffers, especially for the child from a hard place. These children already feel insecure and on shaky ground. For them, unconditional valuing is essential. Valuing statements reflect something intrinsic about the child that nobody can take away, and the child knows this. Comments such as, "I am so happy to be with you," and "You are such a joy to me," reflect their inherent value and build up their trust account. Get a handle on feelings. Troubled children are often out of touch with their emotions and have difficulty articulating how they feel. Adopted children who suffer from unresolved sadness tend to transfer their grief into anger, aggression, or lethargy. Others may have trouble recognizing facial expressions for emotions. If a classmate falls and bangs his knee and your son laughs, he's not being mean. More likely, he has a neurological impairment from abuse or neglect, and he can't recognize feeling states properly and has trouble identifying appropriate emotional responses. Language delays also limit a child's ability to verbalize feelings. Without the skills to express feelings verbally, children will often act out to communicate. Observe your child closely, and if he seeks comfort or rocking from you, honor his request. Encourage him to identify and ask for what he needs. Give him permission to process feelings. For example, say, "It's okay to feel angry. Sometimes I feel angry too." What are some good ways to deal with anger? You can make up your own list with your child of ways to deal with anger, or you can use ours. In either case, the list can be posted prominently for easy reference. Here's our example. There are many things that I can do when I am angry. Breathe deeply. Take a walk. Talk to a friend or parent. Use my words. Hit my pillow. Punch a punching bag. Squeeze a pressure ball. Chew bubble gum. Write in my journal. Draw a picture of my feelings. Help your child identify and communicate his emotions appropriately. Start by getting a chart or visual aid that depicts faces expressing a variety of emotions, surprised, happy, angry, sad, and so on. These types of feeling posters can be purchased inexpensively from educational supply stores and feature photos as well as line drawings. There are also refrigerator magnets that demonstrate different emotions, which can be handy. Some specialized feeling charts, such as those described next, are created at home by parent and child working together. Periodically during the day, visit the feeling poster or chart and ask the child to point out the face that corresponds to what he is feeling. Take a turn yourself, identifying your own feelings to model how it's done. And be honest about your emotions. Children have great cowpie detectors. They'll know if you're being dishonest about your emotions. Reassure your child that everyone has feelings, and it's good to express them, as long as it's done with respect. You can tell your child, it's always okay to say how you feel with respect. So you can say, I feel angry about that rule. Or, I feel sad about not having somebody over when my brother does, and you'll never be in trouble for saying those words, if you say them with respect. Here's an example of this kind of chart. Bad words. You suck. Good words. I feel sad, mad, or angry. Bad words. No fair. Good words. I feel jealous of my brother. Bad words. Go away. Good words. I feel sad and need a little time alone. Bad words. I hate you. Good words. I feel sad or angry. Bad words. That sucks. Good words. I feel angry or sad. Visit this chart with your child anytime you want to redirect him to more appropriate language. For example, perhaps you just told your son it's time to go to bed and he replies, "You suck." You say, "That is not okay. We do not use those kinds of words in our house." Let's look at the chart and see what you could say instead. Lead the child to the chart and point out what feeling words he could substitute for the ugly words. Try it again. You can say, I feel sad, or I feel angry because I don't want to go to bed. Or you could say, I wish I could stay up later. But it is not okay to talk mean or ugly. The feeling game. In this game, one person selects a feeling, and the other person has to describe a time he or she felt that way. So the parents say, I want you to say the name of a feeling, and I'll tell you a time I felt that way. The child may choose happy. Then the parent could talk about how happy she felt when she got a puppy when she was 6 years old. When you select an emotion for the child to talk about, start with easy ones. Don't go straight to afraid. Begin with surprised or excited or happy so your child can tell a story about that. This feeling game uses stories for healing and encourages a nice dialogue between parent and child. The first few times you play this game, do it near the visuals of faces depicting emotions, so you can point to the one of the selected feeling. Once the child is more familiarized with the concept, you can also play this game in the car. Making progress. Once your child starts to feel safe and emotional barriers begin to loosen, startling revelations may come out. One little adopted girl, Cammy, sobbed to her mother. My Russia mother sold me. She didn't want me. In the orphanage, they put a pillow over me and tried to suffocate me. These were the first authentic tears of sadness from a little girl who had expressed only rage before. A few days after this episode, Cammy spontaneously began snuggling with her adoptive mother, making eye contact, asking to be held, and behaving kindly to the little sister she had previously battered. Encourage your child to listen to his heart. Many adopted children want so mightily to please others that they are afraid to have an opinion or feeling of their own. They're reluctant to make decisions and acknowledge their own needs. If your child is this way, encourage your child to listen to his or her heart. Here's an example. What color crayons do you want to use on this picture, Jenny?
I don't know. What do you think I should use?
Do you have a favorite color? What's your favorite, Mommy? Okay, darling. I want you to take a minute and just breathe and listen to your heart and tell me what color you like. The child is quiet for a minute. Then she says, Mommy, I want to use purple. It's my favorite. Ah, good listening to your heart, sweetie. Here's the purple crayon. More creative ways to identify and process feelings. The burden is on the parent or caretaker to be aware of what is going on for a child and whether his or her needs are being met. There will be times when your child is struggling and his behavior is beginning to deteriorate. Perhaps he has withdrawn or started to act up, but he can't express what he feels. Here are some ways to approach that. Make a simple game of it by saying, I'm going to start the sentence, and you finish it. Start your son off with, I feel, and let him supply the rest. He might respond hungry or grouchy. If the child has trouble volunteering answers, you can suggest possibilities to help him get the hang of it. You can also encourage him by saying, Let me see those sweet eyes, darling. Use your words to tell me what you need. Invite the child to describe the color of his feeling. Invite the child to draw the feeling on paper using a variety of colored crayons. Work with him to develop a life book that chronicles his own story. The process of making this book and looking back at it can help him let go of his shadowy sense of the past. Have your child complete a worksheet with the following. In the past, when I was angry, I used to. Now, when I am angry, I will. In the past, when I was sad, I used to. Now, when I am sad, I will. In the past, when I was afraid, I used to. Now, when I am afraid, I will. Important. Whatever feeling the child expresses, affirm it neutrally. Give him freedom to be who he is. Don't try to direct or dictate a child's feelings. Simply let him release whatever is bottled up inside. In this way, an adopted youngster starts to let go of the past and become more receptive to satisfying relationships with his family in the present. Don't edit or revise what your child shares with you. Let your child tell his or her own story as he or she feels and experiences it. Even if you believe it to be inaccurate, this telling becomes a vehicle for healing. A useful resource for grief exercises is Attaching in Adoption by Deborah D. Gray. Grief. A child's grief can take many shapes. It might look like opposition, agitation, aggression, withdrawal, or obvious sorrow. Unless adopted children can authentically express their losses, sadness, and emotions, they will never be able to connect to you or others in meaningful ways. Consider your timing. Make the experience of sharing authentic feelings safe. No prying, poking, or pushing. Don't use a cattle prod. Whenever a child is really wired, upset, and about to explode, that is clearly not a time for asking about feelings. At these volatile moments, you probably should ask what the child needs, however. A good opportunity to ask about feelings is when you and your child are sharing a calm and relaxed, interactive, and safe time together. Then the child knows that you're present because you enjoy him and that you're genuinely enjoying the moment together. In this safe atmosphere, you can ask a leading question and the child may open up. For example, you could say, Sweetie, this morning when we left the playground, you seemed sad. Did you feel sad then? This can lead to a cathartic exchange. Emphasize relationships. For adopted and foster children suffering from attachment deficits and trust issues, close relationships do not come easily. They need your guidance in learning to relate with other persons. Help them discover that closeness with other people can be satisfying. One way is by taking the emphasis off material rewards, focusing instead on activities you can share together. If you want to give a toy as a gift, pick one that you can, and will, use together on a regular basis. Don't send the child off to play alone, but share in fun games together. Make bedtime an opportunity for bonding with such interactive rituals as reading a book together and giving the child a daily back rub. As another example, have a child help you clean the car instead of paying him for cleaning it alone. Giving a child money and sending him away puts the focus on materialism and adds to his feeling of isolation. However, washing the car together can be a pleasurable, playful activity that builds camaraderie and teaches the value of teamwork. Unfortunately, our society has the habit of giving material objects to plug up the holes in our hearts that relationships are supposed to fill. We encourage you to take the emphasis off things and put it back on people interacting together. Make rewards tangible. When you think about offering your child a special reward, remember that these work best when they have tangible implications. A near-term event, or promise of a near-term event, is more concrete to a child than one further in the future. To a child, a week can feel as if it's a lifetime away. When you do want to work toward longer-term goals with your young one, find a way to break the big goal down into smaller, accessible tasks. Reward your child for succeeding on each smaller task and use a visual reinforcer such as stickers or marking daily progress on a calendar. Chapter 8, Continued. Touch, a critical daily nutrient. In every known species, touch is the first sense to develop. The human skin is the largest sensory organ, marking the importance of touch. Nature has designed us to need regular, warm, and affectionate touch from the day we're born and throughout our lives. Research shows that children who get frequent and safe, open-hand caresses fare better than children who are not touched often or are touched only with fingertips. Think about ways you can incorporate more tender, whole-hand touching into daily interactions with your children. Touch is important for everyone's physiological health and is an expression of affection, appreciation, and valuing between two people. Touch builds interpersonal bonds and actually improves brain chemistry. When working with at-risk children, be extremely mindful of their fear and need for boundaries. For example, don't swoop down and catch a child unaware with a bear hug. That can trigger a fear response and meltdown. There are still plenty of ways to incorporate tender and kind caresses throughout the day. You could place your whole hand on the child's hand or arm when speaking together. You could rub your child's shoulders as you help her get her coat on. If she chooses to hug you, give a full-hearted hug in return. Make sure your child sees your touch coming, understands your loving intention, and doesn't feel trapped by a two-handed grasp, for example. The healing power of touch. Dr. Tiffany Field, director of the Touch Research Institute at the University of Miami School of Medicine, spoke with us about the healing power of touch for children. Here's what she had to say. A normal, steady diet of healthy touch is critical for healthy development. We know this from extreme examples in nature, like orphans institutionalized in Romania who gained half their expected weight and height because they were touch-deprived. Then there are examples from cross-cultural literature, like studies we've done in Paris and Miami, which compared the amount of touch kids normally get on playgrounds and in schools. We found that kids in Paris were getting significantly more physical affection than kids in the U.S., and that the French kids, in turn, were significantly less aggressive than the kids in the U.S. Research with monkeys also shows a relationship between aggression and touch deprivation. We've done more than 100 studies over the years with kids with different medical and psychiatric conditions. Results show that not only can we shift behaviors in a positive direction through healthy touch, but that underlying biochemistry improves as well. This applies to kids who have asthma, autism, cancer, diabetes, dermatitis, autoimmune conditions, immune conditions, pain syndromes, depression, and attention disorders. All can benefit. Our studies show that most children are just not getting an adequate amount of touch during the day. They need hugs and carrying around and kisses and pats on the back. It would be very healthy if a child got a normal dose of touch plus a massage a day. I recommend to every parent that the way to get touch back into your lives is to give your child a 10 to 15 minute massage every night before bedtime to build it into the bedtime ritual. The most beneficial and relaxing type of massage involves deep pressure on the skin. Show the child what you're going to do on a life-size doll or on yourself or on somebody else. That way, the child knows that you're going to do the same thing over and over again, and it becomes predictable. This gets them over the dislike of being touched. We think that massage done by parents with their kids is superior to massage done by therapists. Usually, once massage becomes part of the daily routine, parents touch kids even more because they find out it is so rewarding. Easy and beneficial touch. Practice with a hand massage, a foot massage, or a back rub. Use firm, but not painful, pressure when giving a massage. Check frequently with your child to see how firm is comfortable for him or her, and adjust your touch accordingly. Avoid a light, feathery touch for children who have sensory dysfunction issues because it will often agitate and unnerve them. What about hugs? Hugs are very, very good, says Dr. Field. When you get a loving and firm hug, it stimulates pressure receptors under the skin, which in turn send a message to the vagus nerve in your brain. The vagus nerve takes this cue to slow down your heart rate and your blood pressure, putting you in a relaxed state. The hug even curbs stress hormones such as cortisol, facilitates food absorption and the digestion process, and stimulates the release of serotonin, which counteracts pain. Just what the doctor ordered. Harmed children can have difficulty with hugs, however, because hugs seem unpredictable and invasive to them. When a child has been abused or traumatized in the past, he is often operating from fear and the primitive part of his brain. To a little person, an adult is a much larger creature, and an adult's approach can seem like an attack. You can mitigate that problem by approaching slowly, kneeling down to the child's level, and looking him or her in the eye first. That sends the message, I am your friend. I understand you. I'm willing to come to where you are. In the beginning, it is often a good idea to ask, can I trade you a hug? Or, may I have a hug? Allow a child to hug at his or her own pace, especially while you're establishing a strong trust account. A wonderful time to share hugs is during shared joy, when you've been praising your child verbally or had a high-five hand slap in the context of a shared victory. Then you might spontaneously say, sweetie, let me give you a hug. This type of hug becomes a genuine expression of affection and delight. Awaken your child's mind with sensory activities. Your child needs frequent and varied physical activity in order to overcome early life sensory impairments, build optimal brain functioning, and regulate moods. Choose fun games that involve balance, hand-eye coordination, motion in space, hanging, sliding, repetitive motion, and deep pressure on muscles and joints. Occasionally, intersperse activities that work with inner ear and balance orientation, such as somersaults, swinging, and even leaning down to pick up things. Note, use moderation with the inner ear balance activities. For some children, too much of this at one time can cause misbehavior. At our special needs day camp, the Hope Connection, each morning begins with a crash and bump obstacle course, where the children spend 15 or 20 minutes crawling through tunnels, jumping on trampolines, and more. This fun and diverse physical activity session is extremely beneficial for children with sensory impairments. You can provide your child with a similar start to the day at home by letting them jump on an old couch, crawl through a cardboard box tunnel, run around traffic cones, dig through sandboxes, and more. Here are additional ideas. Fill a wading pool with dry kidney beans or uncooked rice and hide plastic action figures or animals beneath the surface. Let the child play in this sandbox and find the prizes. Have the child lie down on a skateboard and use his or her hands to roll in and around a circuit of construction cones or other indestructible and soft obstacles. Cheer and count each time your child passes a certain point in the circuit. Set up a pyramid of plastic cups on a bench and have the child throw a ball and try to knock down the cups. If you can, use a ball that's attached to a string so the child can simply reel in the ball after it's thrown. Hang a piece of yarn or twine across a room just a few feet off the ground. Use it like it's a volleyball net. Have the child tap a balloon into the air and try to get it over the string net. Have the child do the crab crawl. In this activity, the child sits on the ground with feet in front. He places his hands on the ground at his sides and then bends his knees so his feet touch the ground too. Pushing on his hands and lifting his bottom off the floor, he can scuttle around. Repetitive muscle movement and moderately strenuous activities have the benefit of bringing down excitatory and stress neurochemicals in the brain and boosting calming neurochemicals. With appropriate levels of physical exercise, brain chemistry is optimized, enabling a child to learn and organize information more effectively. Throughout the day, at about 2-hour intervals, give your child more physical activity. For example, have the child ride a bike for 20 minutes. Go to a basketball court or standalone net and have the child practice shooting balls at the hoop. Have the child jump 25 times on a small trampoline while you clap and count in synchrony. In this way, you mirror your child's actions, enhancing the relational and sensorial dimensions of the activity. Have the child play outdoors on a park swing or jungle gym under your watchful eyes. Clap each time the child completes a certain activity, or ask the child to wait until you clap to begin the activity, like sliding down into a sandbox. Caution. Don't let your child play or exercise so long that he wears himself out. When he pushes too hard, aerobic activity turns into anaerobic exercise, and the child's neurotransmitters get depleted, causing behavior to deteriorate. If children receive appropriate levels of physical activity, their learning and memory are enhanced. But when they overdo it, you'll get a meltdown and explosion. Be attentive to an individual child's signals and work to stay inside that optimum range. Get trained in the Wilbarger brushing protocol. For children with sensory processing issues, a nurturing technique called the Wilbarger brushing protocol is often recommended by occupational therapists. In this procedure, a soft bristled brush is swiftly and firmly stroked in certain patterns on the child's limbs and alternated with specific types of joint compression. The combination of deep pressure and sensory stimulation wash the child's brain with sensory experiences and can prove therapeutic for many. Important. Seek out a qualified occupational therapist to get you started correctly. Done improperly, the technique can actually agitate your child. Once you've mastered it, do it several times daily or as often as the professional advises. This nurturing activity becomes a special bonding time between parent and child as well. Get more information about sensory processing disorder. Since so many children with early histories of deprivation or harm have sensory-related issues, we strongly recommend that you get more information on the symptoms and treatments for sensory processing disorder, sometimes called sensory integration dysfunction. Two fine books to get you started are The Out of Sync Child by Carol Stock Kranowitz and Raising a Sensory Smart Child by Lindsay Beal and Nancy Pesky. More nurturing strategies. Nurture your child in lots of ways each day. Here are a few more ideas. Hand feeding. Hand feeding your child is powerfully nurturing. Let him hand feed you, too. Food speaks to the primitive part of the brain. It assures children they will be cared for and protected. The message that hand feeding sends is, "I mean you no harm." It's a peace offering that earns trust. Feeding each other is a bonding experience and can be used as part of attachment-building exercises. Add to the sensory input by making up silly songs and singing them while popping a treat in your child's mouth. Create a memory book. Honor your adopted child's unique life journey and celebrate her preciousness by putting together a memory book. The memory book is a type of homemade scrapbook intended to chronicle the child's full story from her perspective. Create it with help from your child using multiple sheets of construction paper or a loose-leaf binder. A memory book is a tool for talking about the past, and at the same time, it's a concrete symbol of how special the child is and how cherished by you. Include in it a timeline of the child's early placements, with photos and mementos if at all possible. As the timeline progresses into the present, include photos, drawings, and mementos from her time with your family. It's important to encourage your child to tell the story in her own words. Fight the urge to edit or sanitize her past. This memory book helps a child accept and process her own history so she can safely go forward into the future. Handle rough spots smoothly. Unwelcome behaviors, such as bedwetting or spilling drinks, are rarely motivated by belligerence. Usually the cause is far different. For example, bedwetting can come from confusing a dream state with a waking state. A child with sensory dysfunction can have difficulty gauging how much strength is needed to lift a glass of milk to his lips, or have difficulty with hand-eye coordination. Your constructive reaction to potentially embarrassing situations will help keep your trust account with the child high and help nurture him to healing. Continue to treat your young one with respect and deal matter-of-factly with the problem at hand. For example, let's say you've just woken your little boy and noticed the smell of urine in his bed. Go ahead and give him his big morning hug as usual. Then say, "It looks like you had an accident last night. How about you and I pull the sheets off and put them in the washer?" Then let him help you remove the linens and remake the bed together. If it's a chronic bedwetting problem, you'll need to see a pediatrician to figure out whether it's a medical issue. Also investigate whether there's an emotional component. It's possible that the child is having nightmares and not waking up fully. In another situation, parents realized that they had bought a new grandfather clock, and the ringing sound was startling their 6-year-old child without fully waking him throughout the night. Once they stopped the nighttime chiming, the bedwetting stopped. Remember that bedwetting and clumsiness are not personal assaults against you as a parent. They're about your child's traumatic history or current medical situation. Anytime you're tempted to lash out in frustration, take a deep breath and imagine yourself in his or her embarrassing position. Think about the fender bender you had in the mall parking lot and how the last thing you wanted was to be shamed by your spouse when you were already feeling small. Guide your child through potentially embarrassing situations gracefully, and your trust bank will grow. Spontaneous regression. True nurturing is an incremental, ongoing process. In a sense, parents are approaching their harmed child as if he were an infant to provide whatever nurturing the youngster missed before he came into the family. We always need to look past a child's chronological age to the floundering child inside and help him progress step by step, helping him crawl before he walks, walk before he runs. In a highly nurturing, sensory-rich environment of felt safety, children can spontaneously regress to an earlier developmental stage. For example, an older child may start acting dramatically younger than her age. She may cling to her mother and want to sit in her lap and be rocked, even though the child is a bit big for it. This type of regression can actually be therapeutic because it fills in gaps in developmental growth. Accommodate your child's needs during a regressive period, and do not suppress the process. At our day camp, we have seen spontaneous regression trigger new attachment behaviors and even jumpstart language skills. By going back to an early, unfinished developmental stage, the child is retracing steps to clear the way for further growth. Be careful not to derail this by inadvertently pushing the child to a later developmental stage, such as acquisition of material things, a teenage stage. What's your style? A quiz for parents. Each pair describes two different approaches to the same situation. Put a check mark next to the scene in which the parent most closely resembles you. At the beginning of the day, you go to your child's room, stand at the doorway, and say loudly, "Get up! It's time for school." A. At the beginning of the day, you sit on your child's bed, put your hand on her back, and softly say, "Breakfast in a few minutes." N. When your child comes to the table in the morning, you fix his breakfast and immediately scoot off to your room to get dressed for work. A. When your child comes to the table in the morning, after you fix his breakfast, you sit down, even if just briefly, while you have coffee and look the child in the eye and talk about the upcoming day. N. When you're talking to your child across the table, you comfortably reach out and touch her cheek or stroke her hair and gently look in her eyes. N. When you're talking to your child across the table, your interactions are reserved and it's uncomfortable for you to make warm eye contact or reach out and touch her. A. When you hug your child, you find yourself stiffening and squeezing him around the shoulders and then quickly letting go. A. When you hug your child, you find that your body softens and molds to him. You hold that snuggle just a minute before he scoots off to play. N. When you talk to your child, your voice sounds the same as it does when you talk to the administrator at your office. A. When you talk to your child, your voice sounds soft and warm, melodic and playful. N. When you talk to your child, words march out of your mouth like little soldiers, one after the other, saluting as they go. A. When you talk to your child, words swing softly from your mouth in a playful rhythm. N. You seek opportunities to touch your child, and when you do touch your child, you use your open hand and let it linger. N. You touch your child only when necessary, like diapering her or fixing a button, and when you do touch your child, you use your fingertips and don't let your hands linger in contact. A. You use material gifts and objects as an opportunity to send your child away from you. A. You use material gifts and objects as an excuse to bring your child closer to you, to share and interact with him. N. You glance briefly at your child's eyes and don't seek or sustain eye contact. A. You gaze at length at your child's eyes and sustain warm eye contact. N. In this quiz, N represents a nurturing choice, while A represents an emotionally avoidant choice. If you scored between 7 to 9 N's, you're on the right track to offering your child deep nurturing. Keep up the good work. If you scored approximately equal numbers of N's and A's, you provide some nurturing, but there's definitely room for improvement. If you checked more A's than N's, your interpersonal style tends to be avoidant and emotionally distant. You risk remaining disconnected from your child. To improve your family connections, actively work on becoming more nurturing. Purposely soften your manner and tone of voice, give more warm and appreciative eye contact, and provide more patient and interactive attention to your child every day. Mistaken assumption. Avoidant parents sometimes have the mistaken assumption that they're teaching independence by keeping their distance. However, many adopted and fostered children have already endured too much distance and were required to be prematurely independent, to their detriment. Ongoing close nurturing is critically important for them. Your child can only reach a healthy level of independence after he has become fully bonded and knows he has a safe base with you, his parents. Nurturing daily affirmation. Reflect on the following thought each morning to help yourself become more nurturing. Today, I want to be aware of my manner. I want to honor my child's feelings and give deep, warm nurturing through my voice, gentle eye contact, and safe whole hand touch. Handling challenging situations. Case study of Wayne's bathroom blues. Children with a history of harm can display extreme and unexpected reactions. The culprit could be an early trauma flashback, sensory dysfunction, intense fear, or a combination of these. It is possible to successfully dislodge unusual behaviors by approaching them creatively and patiently and respecting the deep inner need that triggers them. Following is an example of how one member of our team, Dr. Karen Purvis, helped a troubled little adopted boy we'll call Wayne. Since coming home with a loving family and being potty trained, bowel movements absolutely petrified Wayne. They caused him to cry in distress every day. Just the thought of going to the bathroom made his eyes glaze over, and he'd suffer from stomach cramps. He ran away from school several times in a panic because he needed to relieve himself. Wayne's parents were mystified by their son's bizarre behavior, but had been unable to help him overcome it. When Karen worked with them, she decided first to teach Wayne how to calibrate his levels of discomfort, and then to help him find a strategy to overcome his fear. She began by broaching the subject in a non-threatening way. She said, "Wayne, your mama told me you have problems with your bowel movements. Do you want to do a puppet show about that tomorrow?" Notice that she didn't put him on the spot by demanding that he do the puppet show there and then. She just put the idea in his head for the future and gave him control of the actual timing. Wayne was reluctant to address the problem. So the next day, during a calm period, Karen began recalibrating his reaction to discomfort. She wanted Wayne to understand that he didn't need to holler at the top of his lungs when he used the toilet. "Wayne, we're going to talk about the 5 levels of hurts." She held up 5 fingers and explained. "A level 5 hurt is the worst. At level 5, you're hurt so bad that Mama needs to take you to the hospital right now. A level 5 cry sounds like this." Then she demonstrated a yell. Then Karen held up 3 fingers and described the middle level. She said, "For level 3, you might say, 'Mama, that really hurt when you closed the freezer door on my hand.' It sounds like this. 'Ouch! Help me here.'" Finally, she said, "Level 1 is a little tap or bump, like this." That is how we know a level 5, a level 3, and a level 1 hurt. I noticed that when you have a bowel movement, you scream so loud it's like a level 5. Your mama thinks she needs to take you to the hospital. "But bowel movements shouldn't be a 5. "We can do a puppet show about that," she told him. "You tell me when you're ready."